Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
Welcome back to the Inside Lacrosse PLL Happy Hour podcast alongside Dan Kaplan. I'm Kevin Brown. Thanks for tuning in to a special championship episode of the PLL Happy Hour podcast. We're pumped up to recap the first ever championship victory for the Archers Lacrosse Club in the Premier Lacrosse League's fifth ever championship. The title game was epic. We'll get it all into it, but it was a one-goal game. You may have seen some highlights at Subaru Park. Unbelievable guest we've got coming on here very shortly. But Dan, you made it there, not I. What were your impressions of the game?
Impression number one, Kevin, not clutch. Literally didn't show up to the championship.
Talk about someone not showing up out of the gates. Unbelievable showing out of yours truly.
I still haven't really heard your full like rendition of what, like, did you even make it out of the city before you hit the curb?
Let's come out with it. The tweet wasn't clear for my loyal followers.
Which I thought about quote tweeting and saying exactly what I just said about you not being clutch and like literally not like your face not even being at the championship, much less like, you know, leaving an impression. But I figured that would be too mean, so I didn't do that. I would never do that to you.
I appreciate that. I was in a fragile state. The incident that did occur for listeners to be let in on it, I drove up from my Baltimore residence to the said Chester, Pennsylvania venue at Subaru Park, where the Philadelphia Union play their home games, and I got a bit of a tire mess on the highway where
you were. So
I was on 95, and I made it past a exit about an hour away from my place, and it just the tire totally blew off the wheel.
I'm laughing at you. I swear.
No, it's completely fine if you are. There was a sign that said that the rest stop was coming up on the left. I stayed in the left lane for far too long.
Caution, exploding tires.
And finally realized, okay, my car is bumping up and down, so it's time to migrate across four lanes. Good luck, everyone else. Thank you. Thank you, two truckers, for letting me go. And just got off the exit and thankfully was very safe and sound. Shout out to mom and dad for coming in clutch with the spare tire. Content King couldn't miss this one, guys.
Did you make it to a screen?
So I missed the first 15-20 minutes of the game. But I was watching on my phone.
First quarter completely?
Actually caught most of the first quarter and changed. It was just I wasn't in a position to post anything about the game.
Yeah.
As you can tell from my personal Twitter, I was posting more after the game. It was a hectic 48 minutes of the PLL championship. Lots of highlights. So once I was locked in, I was more focused on the Inside Lacrosse socials. But guys, enough about me. This is about the Archers, the fourth champion to lift the PLL championship. They did it in a variety of ways. Everyone up and down the roster got the job done, and it was a sight to behold. A couple days after the game, Kaplan, I was watching that game-winning goal for quite a bit and trying to calculate the time it took for the 32-second shot clock to expire.
Which, That was pretty clever to put the old shot clock on there. The only thing you screwed up was that it disappeared immediately after the goal.
I try to keep it on for longer, and I guess that was on another version of the video that I guess I did not post. Anywho,
it was great work.
Well, so,
but,
and then I posted like a slow-mo version of it, and for some reason it fainted out a bunch, and I was like, all right, surely people can see this. But listen, none of that matters as we welcome on the PLL Championship MVP, Brett Dobson, to the podcast. Brett, what's going on, man?
How you doing, fellas? Thanks for having me. Appreciate you guys having me on.
Absolutely.
You did just jump in. We are already live. You get no warm-ups.
Warm-ups. Just like in the pros, Brett, you're thrown right in there. Brett. Right off the bat, you're a champion. Welcome to the podcast. How are we feeling? A couple days after the fact.
Feeling good. I mean, there's no better feeling. Had a couple days to enjoy it now. It's starting to die down a bit, but end of Boston this weekend, so I'm going to enjoy it a little bit more. Jared Connors as well, so looking forward to it. But you're a champion for life now, right? So that's always the fun part.
What's going on in Boston this weekend, Brett?
Just a PLL Academy event I'm doing out there with the league. So I'm excited for that. You know, season's over now, but the camp grind, if I can get a couple more in, it's great. A couple just one-day sessions here or there before the NLL starts up.
Yeah, definitely. And what else kind of do you have your eye on here before NLL season gets started? Was the after party as awesome as all of us would imagine it was?
Oh, yeah, it was unbelievable. We went back. I remember this place. I think it's called Spin. This bar we went back to by the hotel in downtown Philly. And then after that, we went to Ryan Ambler's brother's house in Philadelphia, so it was a lot of fun. And then just enjoyed ourselves as a group, and then went our separate ways the next morning.
What's the story behind Ambler's missing tooth? Because I don't think anyone's fully gotten it. Have you gotten it? Do you know what's...
I have an idea. What is this tooth? I think you just lost it one time, and like you get a fillable, fixable one, and like that just either something happened to that in a game and it came out, or like something happened, and now he's just has been rocking it, and it's been awesome.
It's amazing.
Hey, the grit factor, you've got to keep it, right? Like, especially for the playoff run, and it's pretty playoff-esque.
It's perfect.
Brett, let's dive right into the game here. I mean, the... every goalie's dream, I feel like, is to come up with the big save at the end of the game to win a championship like that. I mean, that's the kind of stuff you dream of as a kid. Take us through kind of that final sequence when Jay Caraway is coming up to the 2-point line and you're like, shoot, I gotta make this save.
Going through my head on that last play, I thought that, you know, it was pretty cool. I kind of look back and watched that clip probably like 20 times now. Just mostly because a lot of people have been posting it just to see how close that clip really was. But I was kind of surprised at the look they got out of the play. Like I thought originally they were just going to flog it from deep with Bernsey and, you know, try and get a lot of traffic in front. They eventually got a good look with Caraway, and he got a really good shot off. If it was on turf, I think it probably would have gone in. I've given up a lot of high bouncers this year. I think that was a higher bouncer look that just died in the grass because of the way the weather was. You know, he had two kind of high-to-high goals on me earlier, so when I saw his stick kind of drop, I figured it was going to be somewhere down the dirt, and I didn't get a clean look at it. If you look at the replay, you can't really see it, but you'll see Connor Marr and Piper Bond both sell out dive right in front of it, so that, like, makes my job a lot tougher, but I got just enough of it, and then when there's 0.6 left on the clock, I was like, okay, like, I got to make sure they don't get a, you know, a quick stick like Schreiber versus Team Canada goal in 2018 world. So I tried my best to pick it off. And as I was picking it off, it like almost ended up in, I think it was McArdle, Ethan Walker's stick. So I was making sure the clock ran out and the whistle went. And then I just started throwing my gear. So I was nuts.
Gear goes flying. What's the first thing you start thinking to yourself? Like, you know, we did it, we won it. And then, you know, what's number two?
I start thinking about how good that champagne and beer is going to taste with the boys in the locker room. I
mean, yeah.
What a shoey.
I did pull a shoe. I loved it. It was unreal. I'm glad I didn't get as much heat on social media as Cam Wires did for his antics. But
Was that champagne in the shoey, or was that just
champagne or beer? I can't really remember at this point.
How much
a little
of
bit of
Cam
both.
Wires' like apology was because his mom was going to be upset with him? Do
It
we
was
know?
no, his mom was very upset with him.
Yeah, that's
Yeah. I texted him. I said, "Is this for real? Are you like messing around?" Somebody's like, "No, like my mom's pissed, man. I had to apologize." So it was funny,
Shout
but
out all the lax moms out there. We are sorry for our antics, but that was an epic celebration.
it was
Continue.
unbelievable. It was
I actually have a
unbelievable.
good follow-up to that is going to be the kind of opposite, but I was actually on the field for your MVP presentation right next to your parents, who were pretty emotional. What was it like to be able to kind of, have that moment with them right there for it?
It was pretty cool to see. I mean, my mom was really emotional. My aunt was emotional. I think my grandma might have been crying too, even my sister. So I think that it's a pretty cool thing to experience as a family. I think I look back to where I started my lacrosse journey to where I kind of am now, and all the ups and downs have kind of happened through the journey of not really getting recruited out of high school to being underestimated at St. Bonaventure's to not really knowing if I was going to get drafted in the PLL to not play my first year to where I am now, right? So it's a pretty cool experience. And when your family's there and they get to celebrate, it's like a kind of a culmination of all the hard work you put in with them, and all the sacrifices they've made. So I'm glad they got to be there for it. They got a front row seat to that. And I'm glad that it was a lot of fun that I not only had my family there, but I had some my significant other, my girlfriend, my college coach, and my box coach as well. So it was pretty cool to kind of do it in front of all of them as well.
Yeah, shout out you, Brett. Way back in the day, and I hope you don't mind me sharing this. When I was doing mock drafts for your draft class, I get a direct message over Twitter. Actually, there was a goalie selected in one of the drafts. One Brett Dobson corrected me,
Oh yeah, I know my facts.
See, Brett pays attention, guys, and he was very polite about it. He was very nice, despite pointing out the error on my part, and fully accept that responsibility. But of how far you've come from what you just mentioned, just not knowing where you were, if you were going to get drafted, to becoming the guy, the PLL Championship MVP, it's been quite the road.
Yeah, it's like it's crazy too. Like I'll give it a story. A few people know about it too. Like going through the recruiting process, I only had one offer, right? And there was a school that I was talking to that I had a lot of interest in, and they kind of were like they stopped talking. You know how it kind of goes recruit process. The guys that disinterested, and it's kind of this like oh, I don't think this kid's gonna be very good type of mantra message I kind of got back. So I'm not gonna throw that coach under the bus because he's a higher up
Do
coach, but I
it.
will say.
Yeah. This is the PLL happy hour. Come on.
Who is it?
We'll get a couple drinks in you and then we'll get later in the pod.
Kevin will edit it out later.
I won't name any names, but he was a goalie of the year and he coaches collegially at down south.
People will be able to do that math. I love it.
Yeah, we'll narrow it down.
Yeah, so that was the story that I was told about, and I feel like it kind of helped motivate me to get kind of where I am today too, so
But it's
we'll
a
see.
great way to start. A Hill Academy alum, a lot of Hill Academy guys are highly touted prospects. You just mentioned you kind of had it at a different path into the Division One world. Going into St. Bonaventure, what was that recruiting process like for you?
It was kind of funny. I met Coach Mearns when I was in, I think, grade 11. I visited Canisius when he was still there. And I always joked about him, how he kind of ghosted me, how like any funds to kind of recruit me. So then he took this new job on, and I get a phone call from Randy Mearns. I was like, maybe what's going on? Maybe he wants to recruit me again. What's going on here? And he's calling me to tell me kind of the gig about St. Bonaventure. And going through the recruiting process, I knew that I wanted to be a phys ed teacher, although I didn't graduate my phys ed degree. That's what I wanted to do. And there's like a handful of schools that had that degree that was transferable back to Canada. So talking with Coach Mearns, with it being 3.5 hours from where I live, to having a phys ed degree that's transferable back to Canada, to having a really good basketball team, you know, checked off a lot of boxes, and to be able to get an opportunity to play 4 years there was, you know, something that my eyes kind of lit up at. And I get on campus there for the first visit. And, you know, this is before we got anything. Like, we got a brand new locker room when I got there. Our AD was a beauty. Tim Kenny had a vision for the program. So I kind of went through the journey of doing all my kind of my visit there, and left there. And I was like, I want to go there so freaking badly. Like, it was so cool. I loved it. Small town too, right? It's like it's small school. I felt like everything was a perfect fit for me. So going off that phone call, I remember like, okay, like if he's going to offer me, I'm without, before he can even finish the sentence, I'll be, yes, I'm there. Emergency, don't worry, I'll be there. So that was how my recruiting journey went with St. Bonaventure.
So my next question is kind of twofold, but in general, it's kind of advice to the younger goalie. And the first being, because we're kind of on it, like within the recruiting process, like that type of advice, it's also pretty poignant just with, you know, the time of the year, but also like in the actual cage, like focusing on some sort of like specific skill set, like what would you, your advice to younger goalies be?
Yeah, my advice would be to play like you never know who's watching, right? Like always be a sponge as well. Like I feel like there's, you can go to a lot of these events, like the Goalie Smith guys weren't necessarily around just yet. Like they might have just been finishing playing, starting up kind of the Goalie Smith brand. But going to events like that and learning from those guys learn, do a lot of things that help high school goalies. I think that when you're playing in there, just again, at the end of the day, if you're making saves, you're stopping the ball and you're clearing the ball, that's what it comes down to. You can't really rely on who's at the sidelines, who's there, who's this, right? Because at the end of the day, that stuff doesn't matter. You got to play the game the way you know how you can play. And I think that for goalies that focus in on just stopping one shot at a time and building up as many saves as you can will go a long way. And I think that being a good teammate as well is something that's really important too.
No, yeah, absolutely. And you can really tell it from – so all listeners to this podcast should check out the McNair feature on you and the St. Bonaventure program from a season ago, where there's a couple tidbits that I need following up on that I don't know if all readers of that article will believe. Did you actually carry your goalie stick around campus with you for most of the day?
I promise you, yeah, I did. I would take it. It was unreal. Like I joke around. I got a lot of baggage. I say I carry stuff around. Like I would put like food or like my drinks in like the stick, in my goalie stick, and walk with it like a handbag in a sense. So, and I just have a ball with me. Just like there's a lot of brick walls around St. Bonaventure. I'd toss a ball off the wall, walk the class. Always have it with me, stringing it up, fixing it up. Like I've gone away from it a bit now, just because of how much traveling you have to do with, you know, the PLL and the NLL, and you know, you're not really just like in college anymore. So I've aged a bit from it, but I do have a stick with me at all times. I just did whatever it was with it.
Was it always a goalie stick, or would you?
It was always my gamer. It was always my gamer I had with me wherever
you
I went.
Absolute lax rat.
Yeah, that's me to a T, man. Like watching film in class instead of doing some schoolwork was often the case for a lot of my classes.
Yeah, no wonder you didn't finish the phys ed.
that's exactly why I didn't finish it. So, but I did finish with a degree in sports studies and personal and team coaching. So I was doing my due diligence by watching film there too, and was going towards the degree.
Yeah, there you go. Perfect.
How much did you watch this summer? Were you like big on it? You like looking for tendencies, or are you looking more for like where shots are going to be coming from? Like, was that a big part of this summer for you?
Yeah, like in college, it was huge for me. Like I would watch every single shot a guy would take and write it down, star where they were shooting, what they were doing. And as I've kind of gotten the pros, I think it was nice, you know, getting my one start last summer and then playing in the NLL this year, because like these guys are pro shooters. Like they might shoot one shot, they are not put in exactly the same spot the next time, right? So watching film was definitely a key part, but I also like, it's weird. Like if you watch too much of it, you'll start overthinking of it. So find that happy medium between watching just enough, but not overdoing it's good, and what to look for. And I usually start to see kind of where guys are shooting from now instead of exactly where they put it. And then trying to just, you know, visualize what they might be doing and how I'm taking shots training and for that upcoming game that week.
the fact that so I love that you brought up your NHL experience. So playing with the Georgia Swarm coming out of the gates this season, you guys have a tough start, right? 0-8 to the season. You kind of step in net, the team turns it around, and how much did that fuel kind of your confidence going into this summer, coming off a turnaround campaign for this Swarm?
I think that it fueled a lot of confidence for me, just because I almost feel like, although it was my second season, it's almost like it's my third or fourth, just because of how much lacrosse I've played. And, you know, when you play in the NHL, the PLL, it's two different seasons, but it's all in 1 year, right? So I feel like that was huge. I think that you're going to take a lot of lumps in that league, and I think that it helped me into the PLL. I know we were 0-8, but I mean, I was responsible for six of those first eight games we had for losses. So I had to figure out how to play at a high level, how to be consistent, and how to train properly. And I felt like that went a long way with going into the season for the PLL, just in how I prepared as a pro, how I focused on, you know, developing my game and making sure I followed and stayed in my routine. In the summertime, it's a little more hectic with camps and clinics, but it's still a vital part as well.
And we're just going to keep throwing different questions at you from all over the place, like you're seeing shots from all over the place. But back into the PLL, you guys, there was a lot of, you know, publicity talk heading into it about Coach Resch and Coach Bates, you know, being one of the staffs that's complete from the start of the PLL. And then Coach Resch, who has quite the pedigree of, you know, professional coaching. What was it like playing for them this summer? And, you know, how do you think that that continues to manifest going forward into next summer?
Oh, it's unbelievable. I mean, it's funny. I always joke around, you know, the less I hear from Coach Bates, the better. Just because I feel like my first year, he was calling me, telling me I couldn't travel for my visa stuff. And I was like, uh-oh. So then the second time he called me, it was like, hey, you're starting. So I was like, all right, so maybe that's good. But yeah.
After that, it was a no news is good news type of thing, right?
Yeah, yeah. I'm always on edge. But, you know, Coach Resch is the best. I remember talking with Ryan Boyle in Louisville, and he was just telling me how, like, kind of lucky I am to be able to play for Eddie Como in the wintertime and Tony Resch in the summertime, just because they're widely renowned as, you know, two of the best coaches in the game. And to have that opportunity is a tremendous honor. I think that being the goalie in a Tony Resch's defensive scheme has its perks. It helps a lot. I think that, you know, Coach Resch is so down to earth and one of the nicest human beings you'll ever meet. And he's just the man. So those two guys are great to play for. I'll even give Brian Cavanaugh a lot of love too. He's our goalie coach for the Archers. Warms me up, gives me everything I need to. So I owe a lot of thank yous to him for the amount of shots he's taken on me before games, halftime, and practice before, because I make him go and probably take like 200 to 300 shots before I end, and he's got a good sweat going on some days.
Yeah, what's your warm-up routine? What do you like to get into with the warm-up? You like the softies? You want the game speed shots?
Yeah,
you want to build up the confidence a little bit?
Yeah, so I'll go I always go pipe to pipe no matter what. Like, it's a game, like off a pass, even if there is no pass. Let's go anywhere high, anywhere hips, anywhere low. Then it will go all over, and then I go low wing shots on the left side or the right side, then flip-flop. Then I go sweeps across the top on both sides, down the alleys, up the hashes, in tight, two-pointers. And then usually the old guys will start shooting, and we'll go into like a 4-on-3, 54 type of drill after that. Then we go in for another 10 minutes, and I'll pop back out and just go all over again just to kind of get warm. So it's a little different, but I just like to see kind of everything that I'll see in a game. So if a team does a certain scheme of where they shoot from, I'll try to get as many shots as from those looks that I can. So it makes my job a little easier. And you're kind of already going through the motions before it even happens.
Well, on the point of view, just being a lax rat, the explanation you gave post game following the first meeting with the Water Dogs back in Dallas, it was absolutely perfect. The play coming out of the timeout, Sauer sets up Zach Currier for a timing room shot, and I forget where, I think he brought it high, and
yeah, he went off stick high, and he had hit low to low on Blaze the game before, and I had said something like, you want to go low to low, didn't you? I was sitting on it. He's like, I knew you were sitting on it. I had to pull it short side. I was like, yeah, I got you, brother.
Let's go. The film pays off. Kids, listen.
Yeah. Yeah, he got two on me in the championship, though, that I hadn't seen on his repertoire yet. So hopefully he doesn't get too many moving forward from now.
Well, that one coming in tight from the face-off must have been pretty tough to read, right? It was, I don't know where that release point was coming from.
I mean, I should have known better. It's wet game. He's got, like, the Canadian old-school soft mesh, like the Gymalac stuff, from way back when. So it probably would have hooked a bit more. So I should have sat on it instead of, you know, kind of going. But it was a good pull, though. I'll tip my cap to that.
Got to.
So when I got to you after the game, you dropped a pretty awesome quote about thinking that you should have been at least, you know, more in consideration or won the Goalie of the Year award. You talked about how, you know, that game, winning the championship, you want to be elevated into the category of, like, Blaze and Wardo. How do you continue to make sure that, you know, you do that going into years 2, 3, 4 and all that type of stuff?
I mean, to be honest with you, I felt like, you know, going back to kind of talking about that quote, I felt like, again, like I felt not that Blaze didn't deserve the one. I felt like it should have been more of a push for it just with how kind of everything was finished off. Like, at the end of the day, Blaze is still one of the best in the world. And it's so demoralizing. And I had a front row seat to seeing this at the Worlds when guys are shooting and how easy it looks, makes it look, right? So to try and get to that point is what I want to be. Like, I know that you're not going to have your best game every game. Right. But you want to make sure that, you know, at the end of the day, a win is still a win. And you want to make sure your team is having success first. When you have that team success, individual success is going to come as well. But I think just, again, you know, playing to the standard I know I can play is what's going to keep me there. I feel like this past weekend was eye opening for a lot of people, including myself, with a lot of the response I've received from fans and people that watch lacrosse. So that's been great. But at the end of the day, it's year two. You know, there's going to be a lot of film in the next couple of years on me. So I got to make sure that each year that I come back in the PLL after playing the NLL, I got to focus on adding another layer to my game and developing something that I wasn't very good at the year before and to continue to add on. So that way, you know, you're not getting complacent and, you know, shooters are smart and they're not dumb with things, right? So I still got some guys I need to, you know, dial in some scouting reports on and, you know, focus on just, again, getting better each year and, you know, making sure we're winning games, because if we're not, then I'm not doing my job properly and we're not going to have this conversation this time next year as well.
And along those lines of, like, team defense, at what point did you realize that Piper Bond and Connor Mayer were going to be, like, you know, not just helpful but impactful?
I think the first weekend of camp, as the week's going through, you're getting into kind of like that right before you play that first week in Albany, and you get a little whisper about how we're scratching Mark McNeil, and I'm like, damn, like Moose is legit. Like, these guys can, I guess these guys can play. Then we play that first game. It's like, holy crap. Like, I was like, it's almost like you want to dodge a pole. Like, and I'm not saying a pole, like I'm saying our LSMs, because like, you're not dodging, you know, Warren Jeffrey or Graham Hossick. You're not dodging Latrell Harris, really. You're not dodging those two guys. You might want to go at Jared Connors, John Robbins, or Cam Wires even then, right? So after that first week, and I was like, okay, these guys can ball. And then it just was like roping them in terms of being on the same page as everybody else. And I think from there, it was awesome.
What do you mean, like, roping them in and getting everyone all on the same page? What's the biggest difference between, like, what they were doing, you know?
Just getting used to, like, our terminology, right? Like, I remember it last year. Like, I came from my St. Bonaventure playbook and terminology. Everybody's got a different terminology and playbook, and it takes time for guys to gel. So just kind of get a feel for what they're going to do on the field, how they kind of respond to certain things, and how we can get everybody on the same page communicating and trying to simplify it. So that's what you got the 10 weeks rehearsal for up until the playoffs, right? And you get to figure things out as a team. And I thought we did a good job of figuring that stuff out quickly.
What's the color code for the coma slide for archers?
I have no idea. I usually just yell Graham. And then go somewhere.
Graham, hit him.
Attack.
Yeah.
Fix this.
Haas, slide. Oh, wait, you got him good there. Good job.
Did Graham. You have a good angle for the lineup on Randall?
Yeah, like I saw the whole thing and I thought he was way further back. And then I look up and I was like, and I don't think he even ran full speed at him. Like, I think he took 3 strides and then just lit him up. And like, I couldn't believe Randall was back out there the next shift or two, whenever it happened after that. Cause like I'm looking down, I don't know if they're giving the smelling salts or not, but like I saw it, I was like, oh my Lord. Like I thought the Gobrek one was big. That one was 10 times bigger. You should have seen Hossack's shoulder. So most guys were an Evo Shield chest protector, like heart pad. And there was an imprint on his shoulder of the little dots from the chest pad that he had on his shoulder, that it was still there in the post game afterwards. It almost looked like the Rowlett slash, but with the EKG pad.
That's amazing.
That's amazing. I want to get into more specifics with the championship game in particular. But before I do, I want to go back to a point that Kaplan mentioned in terms of that quote post game of being on Wardo's and Blaze's level. And just this season alone, I mean, are you something must have happened out in San Diego, right? After Team Canada with your kind of mentor, Dylan Ward. Dylan doesn't play you in Dallas. DeLuca plays that whole game. And then I think he gets pulled in the season finale, if I'm not mistaken. I think that was injury related, though. And then he gets another injury in the championship. So, I mean, those aren't his fault, but I mean, creeping up a shoulder. Come on, Brett Dobson. You're coming up there for the Team Canada there.
Yeah, like it's pretty surreal to kind of have two guys from Team Canada playing and starting in the championship game. I mean, remember talking with Jordan Hall when I was in Baltimore. He coached me for the Swarm.
Shout out
He's like, man,
Delaware.
like, yeah, shout out the Blue Hens. Like, we've never had two Canadian, goalies ever that could play at this level. Now we're here, right? So, not playing War the first time, I was joking with him because like it's tough to see in Dallas. So I was like making fun of him. I was like, yeah, like you're lucky. Like you didn't play. You're saving the same percentage. You know what you're doing, eh? So, because he was out on maternal leave, waiting for his son to kind of pop out. So, between that and then like when we were in, was it Utah? We played the last game. I think he got like three in the same exact same spot in the shoulder. So, he didn't finish that game, and I didn't finish the second half because I knew we already had clinched. So I wanted to get Washuda some playing time. So. Yeah, I'm hoping to be on that level. I think as things kind of start to go here, maybe we'll see a little evening out. But in my eyes, he's always going to be ahead of me just because of everything he's accomplished from when I was like, in grade eight to where he is now, and to where he probably will accomplish as his lacrosse career continues to go. And I don't think in my head I'll ever surpass him, just because you don't ever want to be above your mentor or guy you looked up to, right? Because that's something that you don't really think about. And I mean, that's up for other people's discussions, but yeah, that's just how I'm going to look at it is, he'll always be ahead of me.
Now, just to follow up quickly, I mean, that mentorship is definitely something. It's got to be really cool for you. Were there any other Canadian goalies you looked up to growing up?
I mean, yes and no. Like, I mean, you watch like Chris Sanderson play. The biggest one that like I loved watching when I was a kid was Brett Queener. Two goalies for the Nationals were Brett Queener and Scotty Rogers. So I enjoyed watching those guys. I would hang out in Toronto and be ball boy and toss the rock around with those guys when I was there. So that was pretty cool. And
You're
those
a ball
guys
boy
like,
for the Toronto Nationals?
yeah. So my coach Sean Williams played for them. So me and Dyson would go down there and just buzz around a bit. And that kind of is what made me want to be a professional lacrosse player. You got to see kind of those guys. And when I was like 9 or 10 years old, it was the coolest thing in the world. So I really enjoyed it. And I think that like those guys played big factors into it. But then ultimately, Wardo was the poster child for me.
And kind of along those lines, I feel like that's one of the things that, like, when you go to the PLL games, literally, like, every which way you look, there's a little kid running around with, like, something that's been signed or, like, some sort of memorabilia, like, one of those types of, like, core memories that you were just talking about, like, being made. Have you, like, had a chance to kind of, like, experience that or see that with your own eyes as well?
Yeah, like one of the cooler things I've started to see now is obviously they got the jersey stuff. Like you see somebody you don't know, that's not a family friend or relative or teammate that has like a Dobson 45 Archers jersey, and that to me is really cool. Between that and a couple of like St. Bonaventure signs, like to me that stuff goes a long way. And I got to do a better job of it next year. I felt like this year, just kind of how travel and schedule was, like you got to get out of there as quickly as you can. And you know, you want to sign as many things as you can. So I felt like at times I didn't get to sign as many. Like after the championship game, I didn't get to sign really anything for anybody. And that kind of sucks. I know there was a lot of people that.
That's probably my fault. I was too busy putting a camera in your face and making you talk.
It's all right. It's okay. But yeah, like I wish I could have signed a lot more stuff. But you know, it's at the same time, like you got to meet as a team and you got to take care of all that kind of stuff, right? So it's tough. But any chance I can get to do some of the PLL clinics or some of the stuff at the Fan Fest stuff, I'm always down to do that stuff because I think it's a cool interaction with fans. And I remember putting myself in those kids' shoes when I was their age, and I loved doing that stuff.
To end those games well, right? Like to get those autographs, you got to start the game well. In the championship game, you started off tremendously well with a number of saves. I feel like the first couple kind of went right at you, right? Like how helpful is that in just gaining confidence, growing into the game, and making those next five saves in the first quarter?
Oh, it's huge. I mean, I think that anytime you get going like that, my mom was joking with me after the game. She was like, yeah, like we were at the bottom of the stairs, walking up to the top of the stairs. First of all, thanks for getting us nosebleeds of seats at this spot. But by the time they got to the top of their seats, I already had three saves, right? So I think that although they hit me, it helps settle some things in and lets you get in a groove and kind of gives your team and the defense some confidence. And I think that even as I was going through that, like I felt like the first two or three goals, I got pieces of, like I was all over it. I remember coming back to Coach Cav, I was like, F. Sorry, I don't want to curse on this pod. I don't know if I can or not, but like
you can.
Yeah. All right. I was like, fuck, I should have had those. I got a piece of my foot or a piece of my stick or whatever. And I was like on it, right? So like that's usually a sign. You know, that's gonna be a good day. But I felt like at times in the middle of the game it was like, damn, that was you put that one right by me. Where was I on that one? A save there would have been nice, or a save here could have been good. So yeah, like it was good to get them going early. I just didn't get as many as I would have liked to later on.
So you also like we've talked a lot about the Caraway save at the end, which obviously is like, you know, for a million reasons, clutches can be. There's also a bunch of other like.
We also have to go into that a little more.
What, Kev?
We have to go into that a little more, but I'll let you continue.
Well, there was sure. All right, you got those ones. I'm asking. There's a specific one, Ryan Conrad, dead center, that ends up a goal the other way, like. Talk us through that sequence and like kind of how big of a play that was, you know, as well.
So that was massive. I think that like it was, were they man up or were they man down? I can't remember.
In that instance, they were up, I think. No, so I think we were even at that point.
It was either right around
there.
Yeah, it was either right around when like, cause it was the Ogden upfield transition, right?
Yeah.
I think it was right when, right around when the Hossett could happen or not, I can't remember, but I was looking at Joe Keegan's stat sheet, and for some reason, Conrad is up there for the most goals, like highest shooting percentage on me. It was him and Ryan Smith.
For some reason, it's kind of perplexing to me as well. He just, it's efficient, he scores, but it's not always so pretty.
It's quiet, it's a quiet efficiency. Like it was like him and Ryan Smith hadn't missed a shot on me, he only take like four, but. Like Conrad had like out of the like had like eight shots and had scored six. I don't remember really making a save on him, so I just kind of saw that one and like got lucky. It almost twisted my head inwards, and I felt like that was a big momentum one for us because like Warren Jeffrey picks up a big loose ball, it's up and out to like Piper Bond or right to Augie, then boom, boom, boom. Wardo steps out, high arc, Mac dunks it on the back of the crease, right? So I felt like that was kind of a couple that was like a save that led to a goal. I think that one that Rylan Reese pulled up from two off a face off to Challen Rogers up and out. Like that pass from Challen was unbelievable. I watched him two or three times in slow mo, like no look, push it to Matt Moore's ear. And then it's in the back of that before you know it, right? So like stuff like that is like crazy.
I can't talk about his pass. Your pass is better than his pass by like a strong arm and a leg.
Yeah, well, I mean,
you so, like one pass over Sowers to get it.
Yeah, so Piper Vaughn comes up to me, and they were talking about like how like most of our D guys are Canadian, basically, right? So like I can throw like a twister to those guys; it's no issue. Like the first couple of passes I throw into like those guys, they're like, "Dude, like what the hell was that coming out where it's like all the way across?" And Piper Vaughn comes up to me, like we're in the locker room after the game, and he's like, "Dude, like you literally threw a full field twister to Challen." And I was like, what are you talking about? He's like, dude, watch
through
this.
Traffic.
You jump pass. Twisted it to Chow. And I was like, yeah, well, he's Canadian. I knew he was going to catch it. It's in his nature, right? So, yeah, that was funny to see. And, like, it was just an all-around pretty cool play. I felt like a quarterback throwing, like, a fly route over the top that ends up for a touchdown. So it was pretty cool. And I felt like it was a juice call for us.
Big time.
It really was. The other juice goal was the man down goal that ended in the, I'm not sure if you guys mentioned this, but the Trey Leclerc give and go.
Yeah.
Which was another unreal sequence. But yeah, just going back to the Caraway two pointer, he gets lost all alone on the 2-point arc. I mean, are you thinking in your mind at all? Like, as the seconds are going down, because it's from beyond the arc, that this is the game. If he makes it, the Water Dogs win the championship.
Yeah, like, I'm, like, looking at that. Like, I'm, like, in the game, you're not really thinking it. But, like, as, like, after that kind of shock comes out, it's, like, I knew it was a two. And I'm, like, oh, in my head, it's, like, oh, fuck, this cannot go in. Because if it is, this is bad. Like, this is going to be me getting ripped apart on social media the same way, like, no context has gone after a certain goalie for stuff in the past. So, like, I felt like, I feel like that would have been that. And, like, I was like, this can't go in. He's already scored two. I can't give him another two. Like, this would be really bad. So I'm glad I got just enough of it to keep it out. So I was a little worried about it going in because I knew it wasn't a one. I was kind of shocked at how open he had gotten too. But, like, that was, like, just a heads-up play.
Have you if looked it was a back one, at that at all to see, like, how he kind of leaks free?
I've only seen the clips. Like, I've seen the whole, like, everything on, like, the TLN and the PLL posted today. Like,
right.
I think he just, like, we doubled the ball in the corner. And he just came right down Main Street. And, yeah, like, we got caught in a seal.
It did go in the goal. Nobody would blame you. And everybody would be yelling at Jared Connors because he just, like, goes and chases Kieran.
Did you see how close Jared was to picking that pass off?
Also
as well,
true. It was a little high risk, high reward there. But, yeah, that he does. It's very close.
He knew what he was doing. It's not his. Was he on the field when was it the faceoff guy went right down the pipe against Virginia?
Was Jared Connors?
Was he the guy chasing the faceoff guy who gave up that shot?
I'll say
he
yeah.
Could be a high. He could be a high risk, high reward. He knows what he's doing.
the actual shot itself. You mentioned the couple guys rushing out to block the attempt to kind of skewer your view of it, but. Do you feel like you got a good – did you track it well as it came to your net?
Yeah, I feel like I got a decent beat on it. Like, the two we had hit before that, like, that was, like – it was weird. It was around, like, a same type yeah. of scenario, but it was overhand. And, like, you watch it happen, it looks like he takes my manhood when he goes stick side high, right? Like, it's just – it's demoralizing getting snizzed on from there, stick side high, no bouncer. So, like, when a guy dives like that and, like, you see his hands drop, and there's two guys diving, like, usually there's only a couple of options that it could go to. I think that I got a decent enough read on it, and I'd been working on stuff like that with Cav at halftime and before the game, just in case scenarios like that happen where a guy in front of me on a screenshot or a guy right by the guy's hands when he shoots it. So, yeah, I think I got a decent enough read on it. Not That's enough like, for it to be a clean save, though.
That's, like, part of the glory of going is that you get to see, you know, the stuff that the broadcast doesn't catch. I actually noticed that Cav was shooting around I'm not sure how to pronounce it. Washuda? Was that good?
Yeah, we call Washuda. You can just call him Tubbs, Washtub, Tubbs.
Perfect. Cav is shooting literally around Tubbs, making sure that you get all those types of screen looks. I was like, wow, that was prophetic. But also, it shows, like, media timeout, TV timeout, while they're waiting for teams to go back to spots, you and Wardo just kind of in the corner, right at the box, talking. Are you guys talking about, like, the game or just, like, what's going on? Like, what have you been up to? Like, what were you guys talking about?
Yeah, so I was, like, asking. I was like, hey, did you soak any of those ones last time? Because, like, yeah, I know when he usually tends to eat a couple. He's like, yeah, I got one in the leg here there. I was like, oh, felt that one. I got one in the shoulder. Then he was asking if my family was at the game and stuff like that. I was asking him if his, you know, son and Dawson and his wife Allie were there, but they weren't.
No subtle jabs like, hey man, you've already won one. Like, you know, it's my time to shine, baby.
There might be a couple. Like, come on, like let a couple. Like I've ever said in a box, like Ward, let a couple more pass to here for us. Like, make it an interesting game. Or he said something to me, like, he said something one time. He's like, close game now. Eh? You're a showman. You're making it good for the league. So, like, it's just funny stuff like that. It's always a good conversation to have. I mean, we're both pretty easygoing guys and not too over amped about the game. So, like, it works out. It's kind of fun. Just kind of have those subtle conversations like that mid-game and keep it lightheaded.
It was definitely.
You have to be, right? Like, yeah. The best part about being the goalie is those post game celebrations when they all come rushing to you, especially for championship victories. Have you won a championship at any level before like Hill Academy or youth ball?
World Sixes. You forget about how bad of a beatdown we put on the States, brother.
Oh, we did forget about this. We did
how
forget.
How quickly Kevin forgets.
It's all right though. Yeah, I won that one last summer. Won the Geico National Championship on ESPN my senior year at the Hill, and the National Prep one. No Minto Cups. I got robbed of COVID because of that for box. I guess that was the first real big one since I graduated college. We never won the MAC. We got robbed against Manhattan. It still stings. I still feel choked about that one.
Hey. That senior season was special, but you would have won the Minto Cup. We'll give you that. We'll chalk it up as a would have championship win.
Yeah, but I mean, we won the next year, so I celebrated like I did. So it was perfect.
just having that feeling of everyone rushing to you, and I mean, it was one of those rare championship victories that I feel like. It was in the defensive half, so like you go rushing out of your goal kind of to nowhere, and you're just right to the sideline, I guess, right? Just take us through just like the immediate post game jubilation of it all.
Yeah, I mean, like as soon as I got that pass comes in, I get a piece of it, just kind of drop everything. I throw my helmet, throw my gloves, start running to try and grab a guy. I always worry though, some guys, like I was younger, this happened, like. Goalie a year older than me, they had won provincials, which is like basically like winning states for your age group in Canada. And like one of the guys forgot to take his helmet off, and like he hit the guy in the face with his helmet on, like you had to get like super glued shut. So like I'm always worried that like if that were to happen, somebody might keep their helmet off.
Yeah, you took your helmet off right away.
Right away, try to be wary of it, so that way nobody gets me with their helmet. But I have seen the celebration a few times, and I might have to find a couple guys in the kangaroo court for not throwing their gear. Having the helmets and gloves on, still right out of the field. So, no, it was pretty cool to do that. And I think that you go into that, it's like all a blur. Like you kind of just black out. You're trying to hug as many guys as you can and enjoy the moment. And I don't even know who I hugged first. I think it might have been like Washuda or Connor Marr. I remember I didn't get to Graham or Warren until later on. I was trying to find Treasy too because you know he couldn't really crutch out there as quickly as the boys were out there. And then I didn't know until I was in the post game press conference that Tom had got BT with the Gatorade shower. So that was unbelievable. So it was pretty cool. But in that moment, you're trying to hug every single guy and, you know, tell them what you love them. And, you know, if there's something that comes to your head at the same time, you tell them. And I was telling Mar how much I loved that dive out and how big of a game Reed Bowering had for us showing up and all those kind of cool things. So
unbelievable.
Those are moments that I'm going to cherish, you know, for a long, long time with those guys.
Totally. Yeah, that was just an unbelievable kind of coming together of everybody and team rallying. How much, you know, in the locker room were you guys talking about, like, you know, Fields can't go, Treasy can't go, like, Tom, we need to get him one more, like, all these types of things. Like, what was the rallying, like, you know, around those guys in the locker room?
Oh, it was huge. I mean, like, just having Treasy there, man, like, you saw the shirt that Haas was wearing about Treasy when he scored his first goal for the Archers. Like, like that just speaks volumes to who Treasy is as a guy and how much he means to this team. And, you know, I was choked to see that Fieldsy couldn't play, and it hurt him not being able to go. Like, he wanted to go and so badly, and, like, he knew that, you know, it was better for the team not to go as much as his ego might have wanted to let him play. Like, him not playing it was a selfless act for him. And then, obviously, John Robbins, you know, did something to his knee earlier in the year. So when those guys can't play and they're all there, that's just huge for us to, hey, let's go get this for these guys, right? Play for those guys who can't. And, you know, if you go back and look, I think the PLL or TLN posted something about Tom's kind of huddle speech, you can hear it and hear that passion. And that's kind of what we used as motivation. And I felt like, you know, Tom is a tremendous leader. And, you know, I was fired up, ready to go after that speech. So, like, he got me going. You know what I mean?
Oh, I watched it shortly before this podcast, and it's on RJ Kaminsky's the vlog, and oh my god, it gave me chills. I couldn't even imagine being on the actual team itself, and it just segues perfectly into a kind of a two-parter question. First, just him being the solo captain, just what is it like being kind of led by just what's kind of indisputably at this point and the best player in the league this season, and what was that game-winning goal, having a front row seat to that with a minute 37 like?
Oh, it was nuts. I mean, I'm sure you know, you guys have seen that time after time again, and Tom had said something to me at the bar about it being like he has a thing for scoring late clock goals that are questionable, I guess, and for to be on the, I guess, not the wrong side of it this time was cool to experience. But overall, I mean, like, I knew at some point he was going to make a play, and you know, anytime the ball's in Tom's stick, you know, there's a good chance it might go in. He doesn't miss too many shots, and I felt like it was almost like a perfect setting for that to happen. You know what I mean? Like he was in the perfect moment there, and I knew that at the end, like, we would get a stop to kind of bail it out, and we weren't really getting too many six-on-six looks. That was a little bit of a broken play, and it was really cool from my end to experience that. And then, like, you go from that to them calling a timeout to, I think it was right after that, Mar gets the dive out to get the ball to then clear it, right? And you know, like, another possession's coming back down your way, so you know, you gotta be ready for it. So it was crazy. It went by quickly, but at the same time, it was, you could see it all kind of just happen in slow motion too. And it was unbelievable to see the emotion on guys like Matt McMahon screaming and cheering, knowing, but also knowing that we gotta, you know, get another stop down here, maybe two. So that was pretty cool.
So Friday night practice, Fields plays, he goes, seemingly he's played all right and was gonna go. Is that correct?
Yeah, so, like, he got out there, man, and, like, we're kind of hesitant to, like, drop him and see if he's doing, shooting the ball, picking corners, and then, like, he's straight up fully dodging, like, Graham Hossack, and, like, he's telling Graham to, like, hit him. And, like, he was going hard, like, he had the box bicep pad on. I think he just, like, it's one of those ones where you're doing it, you got the adrenaline going, and you sleep, go back to bed, and, like, the next day it gets worse in a sense, right? So that was kind of what happened there.
So basically you had no real expectations on Friday that he wasn't going to go. Then Saturday it was like, okay, like, now it's full on, like, let's get into gear here. We're going to be playing this thing without him mode.
Yeah. I mean, like, I knew, it's funny, during the Redwoods game, right after the hit had happened, I walked up to Brian Kavanaugh. I was like, hey, if that's bad, like, Rebowering is going to cook. He's ready to go. And
you knew right then.
I was like, because I know Reader well, and, like, Reader's a great kid, and he's always got a stick in his hands, and he's ready for the – to text them right after the game. I was like, hey, you ready to go if we need you in 2 weeks? He said, fucking right, so I am. So I was like, all right, hey, we're ready to go. And I knew, like, we're going to Philly. Reader's a Drexel kid with the school there. Like,
right across the street.
At some point in time, Reader's going to have a big play for us. And, you know, he did. He had a big goal for us and was massive, and he had quite the weekend. Like, I guess he – postponed his trip with his girlfriend to Paris, and, like, he had came to this, and, like, he was on the field for a bit, was on the stage, and then bolted right into the locker room to get out of there to catch his flight. Like, I caught a photo with him in full street clothes and his Drexel crew neck somewhere, and then that was the last I saw him. He was out the door in an Uber headed to the airport.
Never an Archer again.
That's amazing. He'll be back. He earned his stripes.
I'm kidding. Hey, what a story. Oh, my gosh. A one-goal game, too. Just he comes up with a timely goal with that two-man game behind. Drexel That's Dragons, man. Coming to clutch.
Backhand, too. People forget.
Yeah, that was nuts. That was nuts. I said something to Tom earlier in the game because he put his stick up. It was, like, in the first quarter. Somebody came off, and they, like, doubled Grant because he was backing into him. Bowering stick was up for 5 seconds in the air. I said something to Tom at the end of the first quarter. I said, hey, I'm not one to talk about the O guys and how to score, but they're disrespecting Rebowering and, like, giving him so much space to kind of, like, almost like, hey, pass it to him, like, thinking he's not going to score. first or second play in the second quarter. Reed Bowering off the pick, back of the net. I was fired up for that one.
Coach Dobson, baby.
I won't take credit for that though.
You should.
We're giving it to you. So can you out wrestle Mike Sisselberger?
No.
Can anyone?
Yes, Graham Hossack. Graham Hossack could do it. There's an ongoing joke that, you know, Graham and Sis are twins. The comparisons are kind of funny.
Picture from Shriver earlier in the season from the hotel room or wherever it was.
Well, there's a funnier one that happened like in all Long Island. We were playing there. Some guy goes up to Graham Hossack, takes a photo with him, posts it on social media. He goes, "Man, I'm so happy I got to meet at Mike Sisselberger today. It was so cool."
Did you do it on purpose?
Like, this kid was dead serious. Like, thought it was Sisselberger, and like it's pretty funny to see that stuff, man. And I room with Sis every weekend, so it's pretty funny being around that guy, man. And you know, he's a ball of energy, and I love that kid.
Oh, that's great.
Is he as much of an animal in the after party as I'd imagine he was?
Yeah, he was up there. It's crazy though, man. Like, you wouldn't expect it. Like, you expect him to be like that, full blown every day, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, like. That guy loves his sleep, man. He sleeps every second he can get a chance to eat. Eats one like massive meal at like dinner. Once it's game time, he's all jacked up and ready to go. So, he was an animal in the post game. I was watching that bit that the PLL did where like they had that music playing, and just his face with the champagne bottle is legendary. Where his like mouth's like open, he's got so much joy. The WWE, but I can only imagine how happy he was today too. I think it was Triple H threw a tweet towards him today.
Oh, so
that
wow.
was pretty sick.
Yep,
I missed that. That's unbelievable.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Got to get him on WrestleMania, baby.
Oh yes, hey, this is the man, man. He's one of the more recognizable guys in the world. We went to this Lululemon across the street from our hotel. The guy in there was a lacrosse guy. He's like, "You Mike Sisselberger?" He's like, "Yeah." He's like, "No way, dude. That's so cool. I thought it was you, but I didn't recognize you, man." And I was like, "That's sick. That's pretty cool."
Bethlehem's finest.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Sis Farms, baby.
Oh, that's amazing. And you mentioned the post-game props for Connor Marge. What other post-game animals got after it for post-game sellies?
I mean, Connor Marr might have had – they're talking about the dive out of the year on the end line. He had a better dive out in the shower with the boys, so that was unbelievable. After the game, Warren Jeffrey.
Was he out of bounds, though? Was Connor – was the ball –
ball don't lie. It doesn't matter. he wasn't on that day. So he was a beauty in the post game. Warren Jeffrey, always a beauty in the post game. Tom Shriver getting after it a bit. It was awesome to see. Brian Kavanaugh was a weapon in the post game too. Trying to think who else. Augavin was up there. He was banging around. D Simone was there, just ripping it up with the boys.
Let's go, D-So made it.
Yeah, D-So was buzzing around. Who else was getting after it? I'm not going to put myself in that category because the shoey itself.
We'll just assume.
We'll assume that. I'm trying to think. There was one other guy that was like, I was fired up to see him. Wires. Like we all saw his apology. But that's just how Wires is. He's an animal. He likes to get after. He's a good Canadian kid. We'll say that.
He does everything 100%, including
exactly
whatever it is that he's doing.
Whatever's in front of his face, he'll make sure he takes care of it.
It's hard to
exactly.
Fall.
Exactly. He was just showing his passion for winning.
Oh, that's too good. Brett, we've had you for an hour here, and you deserve to celebrate all summer here. So congrats to you and the rest of the Archer squad, and thanks so much for joining the PLL Happy Hour podcast here. It's been great recapping the game and all the memories that you've got from it.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on, boys. I appreciate it. And, you know, maybe I'll be back on sometime soon.
We'd love to have you.
Recurring guest. You heard it here first, folks and listeners. Thanks so much for listening. And leave a like, subscribe, comment, if you will. And come back for more Inside Lacrosse Podcast as we will be back for more RPL Happy Hour podcast very soon. So thank you so much for tuning in, and peace out.